Hey guys, thanks for joining me for another episode of Convince Me, brought to you by the Front Row Network and NPR, Illinois. This is an episode that had to be re-recorded because sometimes internet connections suck. So this one's my buddy Clay Foley. You can find him on Clay Foley Comedy. He's also doing a really fun little weird news segment that you can follow on YouTube or Facebook. Again, it's Clay Foley Comedy. He's one of my best friends in comedy and just one of my good friends, period. And he and I had a socially distanced outdoor show and decided to re-record his episode in the car on the way back. So you're going to hear probably some car noise. Also, keep in mind that this was recorded in the summer of 2020, so things were uncertain and unclear at the time. So you're getting a little peek behind the curtain of what non-glorious stand-up comedy is. So just enjoy that. And as always, thanks for listening. And here's my buddy, Clay Foley. Hey, welcome once again to another episode of Convince Me, brought to you by the Front Row Network in NPR, Illinois. I have to apologize. You're going to hear some background noise. Currently in a vehicle, wearing a mask, with today's guest. We had done a socially distant comedy show, and that meant we were not technically on the back of a flatbed trailer. We were on a stage made of pallets in front of the flatbed trailer, which had all of the band's lights and drums and such. And so I had to re-record with this guest because the first time we recorded, there was a lot of breaking up and bad internet connection and what have you. So here we are, and I'm going to bring him on, and yeah. I'm just going to keep talking. I'm just going to be inane and just keep... Now, this is a buddy of mine. He and I have traveled a lot together in all throughout Nebraska and Missouri and Illinois and Iowa and all types
Wisconsin.
Of places. Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Yep, up to Wisconsin. And so Clay has performed in how many states now?
I think I'm near 30.
30 states.
I was. It got confusing around the COVID time because I was having to cancel some gigs. So I had it in my mind that I was over 30, but I think it's a little less than that.
Okay. Anyway, this is my buddy Clay Foley. Say hi, Clay.
Hi, Larry.
Yeah.
We just had a very successful gig, I would say.
Yeah, I would think so.
Feeling pretty good.
Outside on a golf course, I mean, you really can't get much more. And everyone's in their golf carts. All spread out across the course.
Oh, many of them. We're all about social distancing, but I had to remind the audience that, they didn't have to stay 100 feet from the stage in their golf cart. They could pull the golf cart closer. I think one of them took me up on it.
I think three. Once the one did. What I loved, though, is during your intro, you made a joke about the University of Iowa, and one dude just drove away. He was really offended.
You don't make fun of the Hawkeyes when you're in Iowa, obviously.
No, they were... I got complimented because my notebook was yellow and black, and I was like, well, that's not... All right, thank you for mentioning that. So, I almost feel silly re-interviewing you because I know everything about you.
That's right.
But the guests don't, and they should, because... You're a great comedian, you're a great writer, but you didn't start until what would be considered later in life, which is, I hate that term, because they're like, well, if you don't start stand-up when you're 19, then you're going to suck for forever, and I think you've proven that is categorically untrue.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I started, I was 39, Larry. 39 on the verge of 40.
Yeah.
Was my first time getting on stage at an open mic. And fell in love with it, became obsessed with it, loved the process of writing and performing, and that's it.
That's it. I just did it on a whim.
Well, I often think that, I mean, like any career, you have to pay your dues, right?
Right.
Stand-up comedy, they say you got to pay your dues, you got to open mic, and it's kind of conventional thinking. You got to do it for a certain number of years before you even get to open at a comedy club, and then you feature, and then hopefully 10, 15, 20 years later, you're getting to headline. And I'm prepared for someone to tell me that I have to pay my dues, because I will remind them that for 39 years of life, I paid my dues.
Exactly.
I was married, had day jobs. You're living life, you're paying your dues. So, and we're coming upon what appears to be a roadblock, a police roadblock.
Oh, that's fun.
On the interstate, so we're going to have to exit.
That's something.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'll even cut this.
Yeah, so this is definitely where we have to leave the roadway.
Yes, we sure do. What is happening?
Unclear why exactly.
Because they told us to. Because the nice man and the nice lady with the large guns said, hey, go this way.
Yeah.
And, alright, I'm gonna. Huh. Well, I think we hang a right.
I wonder if there's something down the road. Not a terrible accident or something. That'd be awful.
That would be awful.
But for them to just shut it down, that's kind of...
This trip home has been very interesting. Yeah, we've had exits closed off. We haven't had to do this in a long time. Yeah, just hang a left up here.
Oh, that's good.
I grew up in this area, and if memory serves me correctly, take a little left here, and we go down this way. Of course, memory may not serve me correctly, but this is the direction that we were traveling, so we should just go back this direction. This is comedy life. This is road life for people that don't have Netflix specials. If we had Netflix specials, this wouldn't happen to us. If we were in a bus with our faces like on the sides, uh-huh, those cops would have just let us through. If it was Bert Kreischer,
that's right.
They'd have been like, "Hey, it's the machine. Go on through."
But they took a look at the 2009 Mazda 3.
And they were like, and the guy in the Hawaiian shirt holding a microphone, and they were like, I don't even know what this means. Get out of here. What is wrong with you? But why are you out this late?
Yes.
But you started as a animal cruelty investigator, right?
Yeah, in most of my 30s, for a decade, I worked as an animal cruelty investigator here in Illinois, in Champaign County, and that was my career. Loved it. I'm a big... you don't have to be an animal lover. I kind of hate it when people work with animals, and they're like, well, I've always been an animal lover, as if that's enough to do a job, you know?
Right.
But I am an animal lover, so what do you know? But I had a very rewarding career as an animal cruelty investigator, working for an animal shelter. And eventually, it just ran its course. I got burnt out on the work. And
well, I can imagine that would be easy to do with the things that you have to see.
Well, absolutely. You have coping mechanisms, and it's not. I don't mean to paint the job as if it was all bad every single day. The television shows that we watch about those jobs are oftentimes a little bit over dramatized, but. That was a very rewarding career, and around the same time I was getting tired of that career, I was also going through a divorce, and so anyway, there was a lot of upheaval in my personal life and professional life, and around that same time, I got on stage and started telling jokes about some of those very things on stage.
And I remember seeing you in one of your, I don't know if it was your first time on stage, or it was close to your first time, and being like, really? He's only been doing it for how long? I hate him. Oh, okay. But in all the best ways, I hated you.
Of course. Well, that's what keeps us going as comedians, as artists, is hate as much as love.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, boy, I really like this guy, and I hate that I hate him so much for being so good. But then it wasn't long, though, before you made the leap into touring, and you have been, 30-some states, 30 states?
Yeah, yeah.
And have, I mean, you were making a career out of it before, you know, in the before times, before everything got real sad.
That's right, in the before times. Yeah, that's right, and not only booking myself, but producing shows for the most part. The way I book, I tend to stay away from comedy clubs and comedy scenes and more focus on other types of businesses who have never hosted stand-up before. So I convince them to have a show, and then I put together shows. I tour with guys like you and put together tremendous shows. And so
guys like me, there's nobody else like me, Clay. Don't
guys insult. of your ilk?
Of your ilk. Broken drunks that are just happy to be doing anything?
That will agree to ride in my passenger seat for a very low wage every night?
Yep.
Yeah, that's guys of your ilk.
That's me. How's your self-esteem? Well, I ride around in Clay's 2009 vehicle, and he pays me very low, but the conversation's decent, and he doesn't mind when I fart, so... And he doesn't drink... And therefore, I can drink for two and just drive.
That's right. Yeah. You get all the drink tickets.
That's right. I'm very lucky. It's a good symbiotic relationship. when people want you to do shots with them after a show, I just do one for each of us. And that makes them love us even more.
That's right.
Now, I do want to talk about it. I brought that up. So, I know you and I have talked about it before, but you played in a punk band. Or punk bands, correct?
Uh-huh, yeah.
And are straight edge.
Straight edge, yeah. The drug-free lifestyle.
Yeah.
It's just sort of a subculture of the punk hardcore scenes.
Yeah.
Anyway, I discovered that when I was... I'd never been interested in drugs or alcohol. My parents maybe possibly instilled that in me. Never been interested in it. And then when I was about 19, 20 years old, I moved to Iowa City, Iowa.
Okay.
Which was where I first met my first straight edgers. Very exciting stuff.
Ooh.
Very exciting stuff for a kid from rural Iowa. Met my first straight edge kids who were drug-free, into the same music I was into. Happened to also be vegan, which also was my exposure to being veganism. Anyway, it was just a cool little group of friends to hang out with. And identify with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm fascinated by that because with the state of everything, I always wonder how. How can you make it through a day without making the demons quiet?
Well,
through a chemical enhancement.
I keep telling myself I need to, because I've had literally like 4 sips of beer in my entire life.
Okay.
And a couple sips of wine just to, appease my girlfriend, who's a wine drinker.
Okay.
But I've never been inebriated or anything like that, and I tend to think maybe I should broaden my horizons and...
Well, I don't think you have... I mean, look, I'd be happy to be there for you. I can guide you through. I can provide you things that you would like or would not like. This is starting to sound like an after-school special, isn't it? Hey, kid, you like drugs? You like to party? It's not what I... But I'm just like, you might... Look, you could go through your whole life and be happy without doing it. You know, what's the harm?
What's the harm? And what's funny is in my mind, when I play out this scenario of my first time, you know, getting drunk, if you will, I so exaggerate it. Like, I'm like, ooh, I should... Okay, lock the front door. Hide my car keys. I'm portraying it as if I'm like gonna do LSD, acid, every single drug available to me, as opposed to just drinking like a 6-pack of beer.
Yeah, you're not gonna be like Stevie Nicks and have someone blow coke up your butthole. You're just
right.
You're gonna have like 2 beers and be like, but I know you well enough to know that you would get the guilt. Of, oh my god, I'm drunk. Oh, now I'm an alcoholic. I know how your brain works.
Yeah. Something's changed in me. Something snapped.
Yeah, and Amy would have to be like, all right, shh, quiet, quiet. It's going to be okay. Well, we were talking earlier, because we don't sit in dead silence in the car like some psychos. We were discussing your I had to say preferences, but I guess preferences where you enjoy the process of writing almost more than performing. Is that what I did? I get that right?
Yeah, no, you completely got that right. This the time that we've had off during the, you know, stay-at-home orders, shut down, the 4 months without stand-up comedy, live stand-up comedy, has gotten me thinking about what I enjoy about being a stand-up comic. And I think one thing I'm realizing is that I enjoy the writing more than the performing. I enjoy, when I'm on stage, having my best time. It's not because it's not walking that razor's edge that you hear some comics talk about, how it's just such an adrenaline rush up there and you don't know what you're going to say next or how the audience is going to respond to what you're saying. Mine is, I just get the simple satisfaction of taking an idea, writing it, and then hearing an audience response to the way I twist words, the way I form words right into a joke. And so although I'm decent at performing and I'm fine, I enjoy getting up on stage and doing it, I think ultimately it still comes to the writing. I'm most happy with the process of writing and most proud of
sorry, but that's,
yeah,
oh my god.
So we're just now passing the accident that had us rerouted, right?
And it was multiple semis that had,
oh my gosh,
rammed into each other. And we're on fire.
6, 7, 8 fire trucks there.
I could almost have a breaking story right now if I knew that this episode would be published anytime soon, but it may be 6 months. Who knows?
Goodness.
Anyway, so...
Prayers for them. Okay.
Yes, prayers. I'm probably going to cut that part out because it seemed insensitive about me lamenting the fact that... who knows when this is going to get published? Assholes.
And then I'm the one that comes in with prayers, Larry. Okay? Come on.
Right. Well, you're the better of us. You're the better person. So what you're saying is you really like the... Which makes sense knowing you, but you like the scientific and purposeful approach to stand up or to writing a joke as opposed to the in-the-moment, off-the-cuff... performance of stand-up. And
yeah, I believe I do. And maybe it's because it's safer. You know, when I've written what I believe is a well-crafted joke, oftentimes it's a sure laugh. I know that it's going to get a laugh out of most audiences. I'm not as comfortable putting myself out there and taking a risk with...
Yeah.
Something that's not a well-crafted, perfectly formed, in my opinion, joke, you know?
Well, and that's something that I think a major difference, why I think you and I work well together on the road, is that we kind of bookend each other, whereas you are very precise and very purposeful, and everything has a purpose when you're on stage. Every word. I go up, and not that I don't write, and not that I don't want to perfect everything, but I go up there with stories, and you have stories, but you still have very structured jokes.
Uh-huh. That's right.
And I'm more willing to, at times, just go off the rails.
Yeah.
And if I have to, and just play with an audience member, because they're being disruptive... Or they're, like in Wisconsin, when we had people that were having such a good time that they couldn't help but talk back. And so I was like, well, this is just what I'm doing now. How much time do I have left? 15 minutes? I guess I'm spending it with you. All
right. That's right.
And there's nothing wrong with either one.
No.
As long as it works.
Yeah. I do believe we complement each other very well. Which is, hence... in the car right now with our masks
firmly in place. I really hope that the sound comes through okay. But so in the first interview that which I will probably take clips from that interview and throw it in this just so
yeah.
Get all the best of. But in the first interview I remembered that you were trying to convince me, hence the show, you're trying to convince me that the Big Bang Theory wasn't awful. And it was because, not because it's a good show and not because you enjoy it, because you're not much of a television guy. You don't watch a lot of it.
Not a lot of television, no.
Yeah, you're not, that's not your gig. But because of the setup bridge punchline format of the writing, right?
I definitely have respect for that, the traditional sitcom style of comedy writing, yes. And specifically the Big Bang Theory, I do remember when that was a brand new show, and I do remember watching it and enjoying it. It seemed fresh, the characters were fresh, it was, I thought, well-written. But somewhere along the line, I suppose as most television shows often do, somewhere along the line, the people went from liking it to hating it. Maybe because they had just seen too many seasons in a row of the same type of formulaic sitcom humor.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden, especially among our circles, the comedians, it seemed like that was a show that everyone proclaimed to not enjoy. And I'm like, but I remember enjoying that show.
Yeah.
I remember I thought we all enjoyed that show.
Well, and I know early on when I watched, it seemed it was different and it felt fresh and new. And then as the seasons went on, I would come back to it and be like, this is the same joke in every episode. It's that no one has changed, no one has grown. That was my problem with God, I remember the names. Leonard and Penny's love story?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Leonard is just lets her... He is a successful scientist and professor who lives in an awesome apartment. And how did Penny afford that apartment by working at...
Please.
At Baker's fucking square.
The pancake house or wherever it was.
Yeah, yeah. Doing a few...
Cheesecake Factory, right?
Yeah.
For a while.
Doing a few acting gigs here and there. No, thank you. Penny was up to something. I'm just saying. Penny had some things. But she just abuses the hell out of him. And he takes it. And I understand that she's smoking hot. And he's a nerd. But he had other opportunities with smart women who appreciated him. And he just... He's just the Tina to her Ike.
Oh, man.
And that, but I think that's what bothers me. I'm like, they're still together? She's awful to him. But you take away that.
But take away that.
And you're the scientific... Is there another sitcom that won't make me spit vitriol? Because here's the thing. You can try to convince me that the Big Bang Theory... I understand where you're coming from, but I will never see it because I am blinded by my hatred for the character development.
Yeah, sounds like it.
And that's my problem with the show. That's where my writing side comes in. Where I'm like, there's just no evolution.
Yeah, maybe you have higher expectations of it than I do.
Yes. I expect better from you, Johnny Galecki.
Yeah, it could be, because I'm just merely content sitting there watching a sitcom like that and just enjoying that this style of, like I said, formulaic sitcom comedy has been around for decades.
Right.
Even with the laugh track and everything like that, I respect the history of it and the art.
And I don't
feel like I'm making a very strong case.
You're really not. You're really not.
Don't make me defend Two and a Half Men.
Oh, please.
The early seasons. Very funny stuff.
It's something different, something fun, and good, solid. Again, the formula was there.
Uh-huh.
The math was there. It worked. But I think the problem was it was just doing the same equations over and over again.
Yeah.
And that's been my problem with a lot of sitcoms. Is I can start watching them, but if... And I'll start watching and be like, this is pretty good. And then as we go on, I'm like, it's the same joke over and over.
Yeah.
And, you know, this guy's kind of dumb. And this girl's kind of a rip. And this guy, he's the fat best friend. And it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah. It's present in so much art. I mean, music, you know, we want our artists to evolve and change, but we don't want them to evolve and change too much.
Right.
You know, we don't want a band to put out the same album over and over and over, because then, just like a Big Bang Theory, we tend to not like it anymore.
Right.
But if they change too much, we can list a number of bands who have put out albums that have changed, and it's too much of a shocker to us.
Right.
You know?
Dude, I'm just going to laugh this off. I was trying to turn a light on to check the recorder, and I ended up opening up the sunroof.
I didn't know if you needed some fresh air.
Oh, boy. Oh, there's the button.
How about that?
I'm just making sure we're okay here.
I mean, we can... Let's just open them all up. Let's just open everything.
Just open up the windows. That'll make for great sound.
Great.
But okay, so I didn't, again, you're not a big TV guy. I understand that. But like from your childhood, did you watch sitcoms then? You're like, oh, this is... Did you already have like an analytical understanding of how the joke structure worked, or did it come later in life, or was it just something you didn't realize you understood until you started doing stand-up?
I think it was something that, yeah, I certainly grew up watching sitcoms and whatnot, but I think it's something that I kind of had in me and didn't realize it till I was in my late 30s and around the time when I started getting on stage. I think back to, I'm divorced now, but when I was married, I can tell you plenty of instances where I would crack a joke. My wife and I would be watching some TV show. I'd crack a joke. Haha. And then she leaves the room, and like I'm following her into the next room saying, hey, you know how I should have worded that? like editing it, you know, right then and there, learning the writing process. I don't know yet that I'm ready to get on stage and you know, do written jokes, but I can think of those instances. So I guess in my 30s, I started to become a comedy writer. Just among family and friends, even.
Yeah. Well, and that's where it starts.
Oh, is it sure.
Kyle Kinane that was like, I just took a personality trait and learned how to monetize it. And the joke was, hey, you were pretty funny at that party the other night. Thank you. Can I have 20 bucks? And that's he's
that's
like,
right.
That's how it starts.
Uh-huh.
You get enough people that tell you, you should do stand-up. You're really funny. And you go, I'll give it a shot. I'm enough of a masochist. I'll give it a twirl. But you get on stage, you like it enough that you're... What was it? I think we probably already touched on this a little bit, but what was it when you went up that you're like, oh, I'm just going to keep doing this? Was it just seeing... Not the audience reaction or feeling that energy from the audience so much as... Here's this well-crafted piece of material. I give it to you. And then seeing that that what you created worked so well. Does that make sense, what I'm trying to say?
What kept me going and wanting to take it further and further?
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess just the quest to get better. I mean, it'd be insane to think that after a year or two of doing it that I would hit my peak. So I guess just knowing, trusting that I could, that I was going to improve over time, that keeps me going. And then opportunities as well. Part of the, you mentioned that I've performed in roughly 30 states or whatnot, and that's just been over the course of a couple of years.
Yeah.
that's keeping me going too. I like new opportunities. I like doing things that, you know, I'm 4 years into stand-up comedy. I like accomplishing things that others probably haven't accomplished four years in. But a lot of the traveling I do and booking my own shows, producing in other states, things like that, that's a real thrill to me to be able to conquer some of those things. And so I just continue to look for more opportunities that are even a little bit out of my comfort zone or out of my experience zone for being someone who's been performing for 4 years.
Okay, so drill in on that. What do you mean out of your comfort zone or out of your experience zone? What is that? What are you referring to?
Well, I've started headlining a little bit. Most comics of my experience level aren't headlining.
Right.
Now, of course, we should acknowledge there are different levels of headlining. I'm not headlining comedy clubs. I'm not headlining the Laugh Factory. But also, there's just something to be said for doing a 45-minute set as a quote-unquote headliner in front of a bar crowd.
Yeah. That's what gets you ready.
It forces you to grow. Yeah.
Because that... those bar crowds are... If you think of, like, boxing, they're the amateur bouts before you go on to the title bouts.
That's true.
I mean, and you're going to get in there with some killers that this may be the only place they're going to be, but they're going to try and take your head off, and you have to be quick on your feet. I've been getting back into boxing, so I'm really... This analogy is...
Everything's going to be a... Okay, yeah.
It's all a boxing analogy for me right now. Which has been great. It's been a really good stress relief to just be able to do that. Yeah, you're good at that. Those are what's training you, so you can get in to the... I don't want to say the real shows, because those bar shows and those brewery shows and those alternative venue shows, that's where people like Patton Oswalt and, again, Kyle Kinane and Sam Talent, who was a sponsor of Foley Informed, which is your show that... we'll talk about it in just a second, but those guys do all these alt venues where it's like, you know, so often there's issues with trying to get into clubs, so just make your own way.
Yeah.
And so it, to go back to it, it's very punk rock. It's very, we can't play the super cool music venue or your theater. Fine, we'll play the back alley of arcade and distillery.
Yeah.
Screw you. We'll do our own thing.
I remember when as you mentioned, I was in a band, and I was probably like 23 years old in a band, and we'd only been together for a couple months, and we were discussing how we were going to get better gigs or gigs at all, and we put on our own music festival. Like, we were a band that had only played a handful of shows, and we said, well, how about if we just put on our own music festival and we'll headline the music festival? And it's so... In some ways, that is a perfect example of what I do now with booking a lot of my own stand-up comedy shows. It's like, well, let's not waste time figuring out how someone else is going to give us the opportunity. Let's just try to make the opportunity.
And I think that's just how this is supposed to work. Because there's probably a lot of similarities between being in a band and doing stand-up. I wouldn't know, because I was never cool enough to be in a band, nor did I have musical talent. But I assume that there are a lot of similarities in that area.
Yeah, so as far as finding work, booking work... Absolutely. I have a cousin who's a professional recording artist, singer-songwriter, and his career, I see there are all... I love talking shop with him because there are so many different parallels between our two different careers.
Yeah.
He's much more successful than I am in relation to my comedy.
Right,
but
now.
There's also a fair amount of jealousy with him, too, because he can stop creating new music. And the audience will clamor for his old hits and his old music, you know. Whereas you can't do that with stand-up comedy.
No.
They're not out there requesting our greatest hits.
No, they don't. They don't get... They get mad if we repeat the same joke every year.
That's right.
We're back.
Yeah.
But that's the other thing, is a musical artist or a band can be like, hey, we gotta fill this 5 minutes. You guys just wanna do a cover? Do a twist on a cover?
Yeah.
And neither, as a comic, I've always said that you can't go on stage and be like, hey guys, thanks for coming out. So this next joke, it means a lot to me. My dad and I listened to it a lot when I was a kid, and I have a lot of really good memories. I remember it was a warm summer day. We were driving around in the Jeep and just laughing and laughing. It would be some of my greatest memories of him when he was still alive. Anyway, here's George Carlin's 7 dirty words you can't say on TV. We can't do joke covers.
We'd like to open it up to requests. The owner of the establishment came to me earlier and said, would you please, please, please perform Fat Albert by Bill Cosby? So I went backstage and I learned it, and here it is. It's going to be a little bit rough.
I hear you guys like The Machine. Well, I tell you what, I'm going to tell you, back when I was 19, I got wrapped up with the Russian Mafia. We can't do covers of jokes. It makes you a bad person.
Yeah.
So that is also, when you're in a band, and I'm not belittling bands, that they do.
Please, no.
They do things that I can't do. Like, be cool and, you know, get laid in their 20s. No, there's no. Anyway. But, like, when they play a bar show, people are going to ignore them and then go, man, that song was... They can talk to their friend, tell them all about their day, play darts, play the gambling machine, then go, woo, I loved that song. They can't do that when they listen to us. And so sometimes they get angry because we're interrupting...
That's right.
...what they're doing in the bar.
That's right. And they're like, well, what? I did it last week... Last weekend when the singer-songwriter was here, I was doing this.
When that Dave Matthews cover band was here.
They did requests.
It was a mashup of Dave Matthews and The Clash called Clash Into Me.
Oh, God.
That was a bit that I always wanted to work on stage. I was like, hey, I'm doing some mashup bands, you know, Matt, where they take this song and this genre and they put them together, and I just went through like this list of band names that were like cover mashup bands.
Uh-huh.
Never got the reaction I wanted it to. And they were, what was it? It was The Cure and Morrissey cover band called Tears for Lube. And that wasn't a pun. It was just real sad. And people were just like, no. No, thank you.
You got me thinking now. I wish so badly that I could throw one out at you right now in the spur of the moment. I'm driving for one. And I need to focus on the road, but I can't come up with a good mashup one.
This one was bad. It was my whole, and it was a Conway Twitty cover band that sings all the songs in the style of Hole.
Yeah.
Called Walleyed Titty. Horrible name. But I said it to Nicole one night. She laughed, and I was like, "Well, good enough for me." Turns out, not everyone knows who Hole is. So you do a show that you've been putting on YouTube and Facebook, and it's called, I love it because it's, speaking of puns, it's a great pun, it's Fully Informed.
Fully Informed, that's right. It's a weird news program that I started as a result, again, of having to stay at home so much. And so I started putting current event jokes that I was writing into YouTube videos. So it's called Fully Informed. And real short episodes, two-minute episodes. Try to fit 3 jokes into each one. And I love it, man.
Yeah.
I'm really... You can probably tell with as much work as I'm putting into the episodes, I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying it quite a bit.
Well, and they look really professional. And the jokes are super smart and super sharp and super... Da-da-da. Da-da-da. And here's the punchline. It's very... Like I told you, and I mean this in all the best ways, it's very late night.
Absolutely.
It's very late night joke because that's what works for that format.
It's very late night. It's very daily show, very weekend update kind of thing. And it includes the visual element. What I'm finding, because for the listeners, it's... Picture weekend update, SNL weekend update. Uh-huh. You've got the little graphic over your shoulder because it's like a newscast. And so you're explaining the story and telling the joke. And at the same time, then there's the graphic over your shoulder. And the way the graphic plays into the punchline, I'm finding very fascinating, too. How I have to put just as much work into the graphic that's going to explain the punchline as I am the worded, the punchline that I say as well. It's interesting, and it's tapping into a different part of my creative... writing brain than the stand-up does, because as you know, my stand-up material is mostly just autobiographical. I'm telling stories with jokes peppered in and out of those stories, whereas Fully Informed is just, like you said, very late night-ish. And this is in the news, and then explain it. Yeah,
well, and that's the other thing. I like that you find the weird news stories or the silly things instead of trying to be like, here's a current event that I'm going to try and make funny, even though everyone knows that nothing is funny right now. The world's all on fire.
Uh-huh. Yes, I've scoured the internet for the weird and odd news stories. And I'm not afraid to change them, too.
Yeah.
I mean, this is comedy writing. This is creative writing. So if something in the story needs to be changed for comedic effect, absolutely. I'm just changing it.
Right, and you're not reporting the news.
No.
You're finding weird news stories and going, I can make that funny.
Yeah.
You're probably reading it going, that's funny. And then you punch it up and make it a joke. So what I'm saying is, check out Fully Informed, Clay Foley Comedy on Facebook and then also on YouTube, right?
On YouTube, type in Clay Foley Comedy.
I'm doing plugs early.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah, but I just want people to go and just hit, if nothing else, just hit like and subscribe. You don't even have to look at it.
No.
You should. It's very funny. But I'm just saying. So, circle back a little bit. We were talking about the before times. And we're still kind of in a weird spot. But so when... Because I know you and I both had pretty full calendars.
That's right, yeah.
And then the shutdown, the lockdowns happened. Let me ask you this. That first, week or two, were you kind of relieved? And like, oh, I haven't had a vacation in a while. A little bit of time off won't hurt me. And if we're all just locked up for a couple weeks, it'll pass in, a month.
Yeah.
And we'll start getting it. And then, because for me, again, it went from, hey, this'll be fun, to, oh, no. Oh, there's no end in sight? And I started to kind of bottom out on that. And I don't know if you had that same experience or not.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if we're truly being honest, most of us comics would... Yeah, we enjoyed the little vacation.
Yeah.
In the beginning.
Yes.
With a hopeful end in sight, thinking that by now we'd be returning to normal. And, granted, just tonight we performed.
Yeah.
But, like you and I have talked about, just because we performed tonight doesn't mean that things aren't going to shut down again or that this is going to be a regular thing. Tonight's circumstance was very unique in that it was an outdoor on a golf course and we were able to do it.
And that's why we could do it, because it was out on a golf course.
And in a state that's currently allowing such gatherings and things like that. So, then as the weeks went on, it became very real. And as we saw the loss in income...
Yes.
As performers,
And so that relief of, you know what, I could use a little bit of time off, be around home, spend time with my loved ones. It went from that to, I need to get back out there. And I could just, for me, I could feel the rust building up.
Yeah.
I could feel my brain starting to slow down. Even when I was trying to be quippy, I was just like, I don't know.
What do you have to say about that, Larry? We know you got something funny to say.
I got nothing. Yeah, that's crazy.
Sounds very serious, yeah.
Are you okay? No, I'm very sad all the time. I've got 3 podcasts. How well do you think I'm doing? Someone needs to have an intervention. But I know, like, for us tonight, just this one night where, and it was so weird because people want to come up and shake your hands and you're like, I can't do that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you know, fist bump or something. And I found most people when they came up, I did, was like, hey, fist bump, all right. And then Purell'd the hell out of myself.
It's so contrary to what part of our job and our characters is to please people, right?
Yeah.
And that mingling with the audience is so important it's just important to guarantee that they've had a good time.
Yeah.
It's not just about that 30 minutes you're on stage or whatever it is. It's also talking to you off stage. And for that, yeah, that strangeness where it's like, up, 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 stop right there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, I came off stage and I was trying to stay on one side or the other of the building away from where people were. And people were separated pretty well all night, but I still was trying to be like, no, I go over here and I go over here and never the twains shall meet. I will not meet twains tonight. We have to, oh, you want to talk? All right, cool. Fist bump. Yep.
Yeah.
Nope, stay back. Which is, that's the problem right now, is keeping people understanding, no, I don't like close talkers anyway. I don't need you to get that close to me.
And my parents happened to be there tonight.
Yeah.
And they were probably breaking all the rules, too. I'm sure you were having to back away from my mom as she was probably coming near.
I watched your dad lick a doorknob.
My 73-year-old father. Yeah, my folks are 73, and I'm... At least that was a good excuse for me. I could point... I could tell the audience, look at my folks here, and they're the... You know, they're part of the reason that I need to be so careful.
Yeah.
It's because I'm interacting with them. I don't want to be... Don't want to be jeopardizing their health.
Exactly. And that's, you know, that's what I told, because one dude asked me, he's like, oh, are you? I was like, no, I don't care for me. I just have a 70-some-year-old mom.
That's right.
Who has COPD. And I have to regularly go over and help her. We just bottomed out the car on the interstate. Thanks, Illinois. It's all that, weed money. Fix a road,
yeah.
Fix a pothole. So, all right. So we talked about the Big Bang Theory. That's the thing that you like that most people hate. Is there something that you dislike that most people seem to like?
Mm. This is gonna be. Well, I'll just come out and say it. Oreos. You know those cookies, Oreos?
I'm familiar. You've seen my body. I'm obviously familiar with Oreos.
I think, well, Oreos are overrated. I mean, they're just a couple dry cookies with cream filling. And, but I find them fascinating as well. Because you go into the grocery store, they have an entire 8-foot section now. It used to just be the black cookies, or the chocolate cookies with the white interior, and they have so masterfully
how you described it.
Black
cookies with white interior. What? It's a cookie. You're not selling me a Cadillac in South Chicago in 1978. You know, it's...
I knew I was doing it wrong as I was doing it, but I just kept going.
I just kept feeding you the rope,
the
too.
The white interior.
White interior was the best way. Because you're right, there's nothing natural about that. It's just, it's cream filling. It's white interior. That's how I'm referring to it from now on. Just like I only call Limp Bizkit Fred Durst and the Bizcats from now on. If you listen to episode 1 with my interview with Kyle Fields, you'll know that's where we came up with that.
So I'm not a fan of Oreos, and which is controversial among my vegan friends because Oreos have always been there for us. They've always been vegan. They've been one of the go-to snacks. Even 20 years ago, when it wasn't as easy to find vegan snacks, Oreos were there for us. And I'm turning my back on them, but here's what I do respect about Oreos. They've tapped into, especially Americans' obsession with unique flavors and our willingness to buy something at least once just to try it. Because I don't know how many different flavors of Oreos there are.
They had a Swedish fish one, and that's when I was like, just take us, Lord.
They did.
We've gone too far.
Yes.
We've turned our backs on you and their Swedish fish Oreos. And you know what? If one of you out there is like, I like Swedish fish Oreos, you can email the Front Row Network. I'm sure Craig and Jeremy would love to read that hate mail.
But it's fascinating. So many foods now are a bunch of cereals. I mean, cereals are very much... into different flavors.
Oh, yeah. Cereal's my jam.
And I heard once that Cinnabon, I'm not going to report facts here, but I did read an article once that claimed that Cinnabon, the company Cinnabon, makes more money from their, what would it be called, licensing, their name, than they do from their restaurants.
Well, that's because they're... Cinnabon, I think, only exists in airports.
Yeah, this is true. This is, I believe, true.
Yeah, and I've never... Okay, I take that back. There is... So, between... It's between, what... Is it outside of Danville, or is it... It's between Champaign and Danville, where Sleepy Creek is.
Ooh, yeah, I know what you're talking
about.
There's
a truck stop that has Cinnabon cinnamon rolls.
Yes.
And it's the only place I've seen have Cinnabon outside of an airport. And it's in the middle of BF nowhere, Illinois.
Eastern Illinois. Yeah, it sure is. Sure is. I don't know that little town, but...
And they have a Cinnabon.
They do.
And it boggles my mind. But I've... Anytime I'm over there, you better believe...
Yeah.
Nicole and I will get a Cinnabon. We will lean on the car and eat it on the car, like the little piglets that we are. I say that about my beautiful wife, but come on. When you're eating Cinnabon off the back of a Prius, you're a little piglet, is what you are.
You're a little oinking.
You're a
little swine.
Yep. You are a dirty not human, is what you are. A little pig boy.
But I'm fascinated by that because our attachment to brands and the emotional attachment that we get. I mean, so many.
We saw it tonight with that dude and his beer.
Yeah.
He was offended if you drank anything but Miller Lite.
That's right.
It was like, why do you care?
He needed to pull you aside. Or I guess it was one of the other comics that he pulled aside, Jesse, and corrected him.
Yeah.
Corrected him, right?
He did. Well, when I went up to get a beer, I was like, what do you got? He goes, we got Miller Lite. And I was like, anything Miller Lite? And I was like, whatever, it's cold. I'll take it. And it turns out they had all types of flavors of beer. I don't understand brand loyalty like that. You know, oh, phew, drinking Miller Lite, I can't believe it. You know,
right,
beer. However you want to poison yourself, you're poisoning yourself. I don't understand the need to be mad at another human.
It's like, it reminds me of that old Todd Barry joke where he said that some, he mentioned that he had gone to like University of Florida, and someone in the audience was like, "Boo, Florida State, man!" And he's like, "Oh," Todd Barry's like, "Oh, you went to another school. I see." The least tolerant person in the world. One school, 40 million students.
Yeah, I don't understand. Like, when people are so upset, you're like, "You drive a Ford, well, Chevy is the best." And it's like, well, they both don't hold up like a Toyota does. I don't know what. You know, you could drive a Toyota or a Hyundai for 20 years.
Yeah.
And you just duct tape the wheels back on and it goes forever. You know, you get a Ford to last for 8 years or 150,000 miles and you're in good. I am probably not going to get a Ford sponsorship now, am I?
Well, I was thinking, we're mentioning a lot of brands. I don't suppose you have any rules against mentioning brands.
Well, no one told me if I did.
Oh, it's probably pretty harmless.
Well, and we're not making fun of the brands. We're just we're just saying that, you know, as examples.
I don't know if Oreo would appreciate me describing them as black cookies with white interior.
Yeah.
I love licking that white interior out of it. From between those two black cookies.
Hey, Oreo, I love you. And I will never not love you. I forgive you for the Swedish fish. I'm sure you understand that was a mistake. And we all go through a hard time. I don't know if your Swedish fish cookie was the equivalent of a girl cutting her own bangs. It just...
Yeah.
I'm guessing someone got real sad and just had to do something crazy.
Oh, I love that.
But you know what? I'm always going to be there for you. And you for me. Thanks, Oreo. Well, you did not successfully convince me, Clay Foley, in either way. But you did convince me that I do love traveling with you. And this is always a blast. Because this is just... I feel like we were slightly more formal because I turned on a microphone. But this is pretty much just conversations we have.
Oh, you're holding a microphone? Oh.
Huh.
That was not a dirty joke, I meant.
I stopped myself from making a dirty joke.
Yeah.
Yeah, but over here is my... Anyway.
Okay, yeah.
Which one do you want to speak into? Oh, God. I feel like I...
But no, this is... What we've experienced for the past hour or so is exactly what it's like to travel together, man.
I think it's actually kind of fascinating.
Uh-huh.
Maybe not to anyone but us. But this is road comedy. It's travel 3 hours one way.
It's kept me wide awake.
It does help, too, when you're like, I gotta create content and entertain strangers on the internet. I should just keep talking. all right, buddy. There's nothing happening. Our calendars are a vast freaking wasteland
right now. They are.
However, one day, hopefully soon, they won't be. So maybe just plug your social... Plug whatever you want to plug. I don't know.
That's right.
Plug the Big Bang Theory. That's right. It went off the air finally.
I want to plug Fully Informed because it doesn't matter if we're getting on stage to perform stand-up or not. Fully Informed will be your weekly source for weird news with punchlines.
Excellent.
And so go to clayfoley.com and or go to YouTube and type in Clay Foley Comedy and you're going to find my little videos that I do and you can subscribe and laugh along with me. See my face.
I know I do. And that sounded insincere, but like your first episode that you did, it was another one of those moments where I went, God, he's good. I hate him. I love him so much, but man, I hate him for being this good at, and I think I even messaged you and went, I hate you for being so good at writing jokes.
No, stop it.
But that's what I told you. I told you I hated you for being so good at writing jokes. So, freaking listen. Listen to me when I say,
okay.
Go watch his show, you lovely jerks.
That's right. Binge watch.
Binge watch. It will take you 12 minutes.
Exactly. Yeah.
Then like and subscribe. It costs you nothing. Just like and subscribe this too.
Yeah.
It costs you nothing.
Uh-huh.
Just time. Just a slight time investment. You gotta poop anytime. You gotta poop. Just watch it on the toilet. You can watch most of it on the... probably gonna cut that part.
Please.
Please
help us. No, no.
I thought you just... Please, cut that part. Like, it was the only time I'd ever heard you be disapproving of me. And it kind of broke my heart for a second. Please. Oh, no. Oh, no. Please help us, is what you're saying. Yes. We're just trying to fill the void. We're both empty inside without performing. And we need this. We need you.
Really, truly.
So if anybody wants to back a trailer into their backyard.
Hey, yeah. Throw some catfish in the fryer like they did tonight.
Don't touch us and don't come near us.
That's right.
We'll bring sound equipment and lights. And we will do a show.
It'll be ungodly hot and humid.
I will wear shorts this time. Now it's the rule, don't wear shorts on stage. When you're doing an outdoor show, shorts from now on.
One guy, one of us wore shorts
and
tonight.
And no one cared. That was the thing.
He runs an open mic where comics are probably, made fun of every single week for wearing shorts, and he was there wearing shorts. I'm not sure if I got a photo of him wearing shorts, but I should have.
I wish you had.
Yeah.
But I think it's the outdoor show is different. Wear shorts. I almost did shorts and flip-flops. And,
yeah.
Just because I knew it was going to be hot. But, you know, I'm dry now. I'm in my filth. I'm sitting here in my filth. Mm-hmm. It's in your seat forever and ever. My filth is just... It's your seat has just absorbed it.
Yeah.
My essence is there. Please don't make your fiance ride in the passenger
no,
seat.
No, that's I change out the seats.
Thank God.
I change them
this
out.
This is the comedian seat.
Yeah.
I know how dirty you people are. I'm not making that.
It's not like a van where it easily pops out either. It's an entire day's job to switch it in and out.
Oh, who are you traveling with, Larry? Oh, I'll go get a seat.
Yeah.
He's a mess. Well, thanks for re-recording with me, buddy. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're so welcome. So welcome.
This is always fun.
I think this was an even better interview.
I think it was, actually. Yeah. In person is always better.
I know I was looser.
Yeah. Well, it's also late at night and we're silly.
Yeah, that's right.
And riding the high of a good show. So, thanks Iowa for having us. Thank you, listener, for listening to us.
Thank you, listener.
For hey, why don't you say goodbye?
Goodbye.
It's almost upsetting with the way you said it. I don't know. For Convince Me, this is Larry Smith. Thanks for listening.
This episode is a production of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more information and to see the full slate of Front Row Network shows, you can visit frnpod.com or nprillinois.org. You can also find and follow us on social media by searching for the Front Row Network on Facebook and Instagram, and Front Row Reviews with a Z on Twitter.